Hello there. You're about ready to listen to a very special sneak peek of our Patreon-exclusive show, Spider-Versity. This is the show where Sal from Comic Pop and myself explore every aspect of Spider-Man media, including every Spider-Man movie, even the spinoffs like Venom and Morbius, and now Spider-Man the Animated Series. So if you enjoy this episode and would like to check out the rest, you can do that over at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. Enjoy the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Spider-Versity. This is the show where my pal Sal and I talk about Spider-Man movies. And of course, listen, it was all pretty straightforward up to this point because Spider-Man was in the movies. And now Sony was like, ooh, we got to milk that IP for all it's worth, baby. And we are now in Venom. Sal, say hi to the kids at home.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to this special live episode. I'm sorry it starts with Venom.
Well, let's segue off of that. What are your initial thoughts, before we get into it, initial thoughts on Venom?
Okay, I have a very complicated history with Venom. Obviously, I grew up when he was invented, and he is awesome looking, mm-hmm. and was my favorite Spider-Man villain until I, you know, realized there were other characters, and they've been trying to make a Venom movie forever. They finally did, and I remember being very against the concept, just the whole idea. I didn't like it. I know it represented greed and graft, and it was just going to complicate everything, and they were going to try and shoehorn him in everywhere if it was going to work out. And so I didn't see it. Like, when it came out in theaters, I was like, I'm boycotting it. We were doing this for a living, and I was like, I'm taking a stand. I'm not going to review it. I'm not going to talk about it. No Venom. And about a year or so later, I finally saw Venom, and I was like, no, that was like a movie.
Yeah. That,
you know, they made like a movie. It was very cookie cutter by the numbers. Like, it's harmless. Having watched it again yesterday, it's terrible.
It's tough. So here's what I'll say. Similar to you, I grew up in the era, born in the 80s, but like grew up in the 90s. So,
exactly.
So I have a lot of love in my heart for characters like Venom and Ben Reilly. And I even have some copies of the Clone Saga that I still own and I remember fondly.
Yeah.
And I am one of those people, like I know some of the, when Sam Raimi was getting to do Venom, some of the people were like, well, it's because Venom sucks. And it's like, okay, listen, it's not like fucking Doc Ock is Shakespeare. You give him a few decades and eventually a few of those stories are good. And it's the same thing with Venom. Like, I think there's a lot of merit in the character. I like the character. Cause, again, as we know, growing up in the 90s, as long as your character, your comic book superhero character, looks cool, you're halfway there. That's kind of all you need to do. Does it look cool? They'll have a good shelf life.
Yeah.
Like you, when it came to this movie, I am hard. It was hard when I was trying to explain, because again, we were already doing what we're doing. This is 2018, so we're already doing what we're doing. But I was hard pressed to come up with an analogy to accurately portray why a Venom movie without Spider-Man movie doesn't work, because it's hard to think of another character so dependent on the other. Like, I think the and obviously this is, we've gone through this too, but like Joker, maybe it's like, yeah, how do you, because even the Joker movie had Bruce Wayne.
Yes. No, I had a problem with the Joker movie too, like in terms of them going like, we're making a Joker movie, and I'm like, why? It'd be like making a Lex Luthor movie.
Yeah, and it's like but specifically without Superman. It's like, yeah, you can make a Lex Luthor movie, but you need to acknowledge that the other person is around. Like a Catwoman thing. It's like, well, actually, Catwoman, I think, would be better in a world with Batman, but theoretically could exist independently. She doesn't necessarily need Batman to be a thing.
They were going to make that. Tim Burton was going to make that Catwoman movie back in like the early 90s.
It's
remember?
Wild.
Like, that was.
It's
that man, what a cool idea. And well, I wish we'd live in that world.
And I'm still kind of baffled that, like, you know, we've got as of this recording, we're weeks away from the Batman coming out. And it's like, we're getting a Gotham PD series and a Penguin series. And I'm like, Zoe Kravitz as Catwoman is right there. What are you doing?
Yeah. and people would watch the hell out of that. Are you kidding me? She's incredible. That'd be great.
So, on the one hand, for Sony, it makes sense that they would go for Venom because of how popular he is. And normally the way my brain works around this stuff, it's like, okay, yeah, you could do a Venom movie because Venom's sustained his own comic series.
Yes.
Like when they're doing like, we're going to do a Kraven movie. It's like, well, now that's fucking crazy. What the fuck? Even Morbius,
don't.
It's like... Morbius is a character that is a Spider-Man villain, but could exist without Spider-Man. Fine. Also, he has had his brief runs in the. Sure, fine. But yeah, go for it.
Yeah, they're terrible, but yeah, he has had books.
Yes, there is something you could do there. I have very little confidence that the movie we're going to get is that, but theoretically, I'm open to the concept of it.
Yes, agreed.
Like you, going into this movie is fundamentally harmless. I do like, I've also, as of this recording, just recently watched Uncharted for one of the Stupid Answers, the show we do, and I do like that Sony has kind of gotten into this place where it's kind of like, it's just settled like, yeah, man, we're just making these movies. We're not going to treat them like this is going to change the game. We're just making, and we'll blissfully make them under 2 hours. It's not going to be 2.5 hours where it's like, hey, it's going to be like 1 hour, 50 minutes. Get in, have some fun, get out.
Yeah.
I will say that of the movies we've covered, because again, for those that maybe are just tuning in for the first time, I have 9 pages of notes here. Of the movies we've covered, Venom is probably the least built to handle that sort of scrutiny.
No, it's true. Yeah.
Because it doesn't. It barely holds together. Like, listen, we were being hard on the Amazing Spider-Man films, but those elements of those movies really hold together. Like, this really doesn't stand up to any sort of scrutiny. But let's get into it. The synopsis on IMDb is: a failed reporter is bonded to an alien entity, one of many symbiotes who have invaded Earth. But the being takes a liking to Earth and decides to protect it, which is a summary.
That technically happens. I love that description of, like, he takes a liking to Earth. Yeah, he does, for in one line,
yes,
with no character development, he does do
he
that.
He does. Oh, and I'm going to admit this up front. So normally there's a pretty clear distinction of, like, hey, this is when we should end the first episode. And
right.
I had, because these discussions are 2 episodes. And I had that here, and then, like, I finished, like, the after that point, like, immediately, I was like, oh, well, maybe we'll see where things land, because...
Yeah, no, it could be. This could be a done in one. This really could.
Yeah, because I was going to take this up to the reveal of Venom.
Right.
But then the movie just doesn't stop after that. It's just like,
no.
And then.
Yeah, and there... Oh, man. This is one of those movies that, like, if... I remember, like, because you and I are both film buffs. We love the art and the science of making movies.
Yes.
And I've always, like, fantasized about having been a teacher. I've fantasized about teaching a film class. And I would love to have, like a whole unit on, like, what not to do. You know, like, and literally just show them, like, The Room and be like, where did they go wrong? Like, why is this wrong? Like, why didn't it work?
And then you could do
movies where I'm,
you could do a whole nother day on The Room where it's like, but why is it wrong in the right way?
Yeah, like, why is this fun?
Yeah.
Like, what is it? Is it Schadenfreude? What is it? But with Venom, you could legitimately, like, teach a screenwriting class on, like, now why did we come to Mrs. Chen's place twice to deliver 2 pieces of information with no good scene between them, when you could have had all those things take place in Mrs. Chen's grocery store in one scene.
In one scene, yes.
Like,
yeah,
oh, and because the movie needs to be 1 hour and 57 minutes long. That's why.
Well, yeah,
it can't be like 67 minutes.
And but you know what? But could it be? Anyway, also
there's got to be a fan edit out there somewhere of making like a 67 minute long Venom movie.
I don't have the time for it anymore. We don't need to get into it. I don't have the time for it anymore. But I am excited for when the second Dune comes out. I want to see. I would, but I don't have the time. Make an edit where that's just one movie, because I do think you could make, based on the first Dune. I feel like it could be one movie, and I know Dune fans are going to hate this. You just have to cut things out. You just have to cut things out.
Right.
We don't need this, man. Yeah, we don't need the same speech about the special knife, because it's the same information.
Yeah, we got that information. Move on, please.
Yeah. Anyway, that's not this movie, but no. I do hope you get to teach that class, because I do think this is a good case study for it's because it's the clearest example of, I think, a problem that is plaguing almost all major studio blockbusters. It's just very obvious here, but it's the same.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter how much you like it. It's like a lot of the same blockbusters. Even to, it's now TV shows like stuff like Boba Fett and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, this is what happens when your script is just like a series of suggestions, and then you figure it out on the day. Anyway,
yeah,
on Rotten Tomatoes. Man, this is the best. Again, speaking of this as being a great example of just our modern blockbuster culture, this Rotten Tomato score is perfect, because the Rotten Tomato score is 30% and the audience score is 81%, baby.
Oh, yes.
The critics' consensus is Venom's first standalone movie turns out to be like the comics comics character in all the wrong ways, chaotic, noisy, and in desperate need of a stronger attachment to Spider-Man. This, of course, is directed by Ruben Fleischer, who, oh my God, Sal, I was so excited for more Ruben Fleischer movies after Zombieland.
And right?
He's just a workman. He's just on Sony speed dial for when they just need a guy that's going to get that shit done.
Yes. And incidentally, I was actually just out of nowhere, YouTube, because everyone's listening, suggested to me a video with Fleischer being interviewed like around the time of Let There Be Carnage, where they said, what do you think about the audience score versus the critic score? And you could tell how bummed he is, like, because he knows the movie sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's like, he goes, I mean, you know, the audience really likes it. I mean, like, and I think that really is, like, Rotten Tomatoes is toxic and terrible, but, like, the people who like that movie love it. And, you know, the critics, like, really, really didn't respond to it. And it's just, like, very diplomatic, but you could tell this dude wasn't like, I love this. You know, there's some people who make a movie where, like, the critics hate it, and they're like, I love this movie, I don't care what the critics say.
Yeah.
This dude is like, I mean, like, we made it in 2 months. Like, what do you want from me?
Yeah, like if you ask Zack Snyder those questions, he is convinced he's made the greatest film of all time.
Exactly. Yeah, conviction.
Yeah,
conviction.
He has got that. If anything else, that man has conviction. This movie was written by Jeff Pinker, who also did the Jumanji reboots and Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Okay,
yep,
I feel it.
Yep, and Scott Rosenberg, who also did the Jumanji reboots, and also Con Air and Gone in 60 Seconds, and I want a version of this movie that has Nicolas Cage in it.
Please, as Venom.
could you imagine hold on, transport back in your brain, 90s Venom movie starring Nicolas Cage as Eddie Brock.
That is an idea so solid Wizard would have plugged it 17 times. Like, that is such a good idea. Oh, and instead we get him as Ghost Rider way past the time when that was okay.
When that was a thing. And I will defend the second Ghost Rider movie, because that comes in with big crank energy, and I love it.
Agreed. No, it's a more watchable movie by a country mile.
He pisses fire in that movie, and it's and then there's the scene where he's, oh my God. Anyway,
Ghost Rider University.
Yeah, exactly. God, shit. And then Carolee Marcel, who also did the story by Cruella. So, getting into the movie proper, we, of course, start with your first warning sign, which is a thing that says the Marvel logo comes up, and then above it says, in association with. It's like, okay, cool. Thanks for letting me know.
Licensing characters from. Like, that's not even close to association.
Yeah, I love that, I know that they talked about how, like, Kevin Feige gave notes on this movie, and I wish I could have been there on that day. Because you talk about being diplomatic, and Kevin Feige seems like an incredibly diplomatic person. He's like, oh, okay, what can we do with this?
Yeah, well, you know what?
Yeah. You know what? Good job, everybody.
Right. It seems like everyone really it's one of those really terrible compliments where it's like, it looks like you guys had a lot of fun making this movie.
Yes. And that is, Tom Hardy definitely had a fucking blast making this movie.
Yeah.
Making her requisite live appearance as my dog, Nona. What do you want? Do you want to be on the show? Too bad. Get out of here.
She's precious.
I love you. She is precious. So we get an opening shot with the stars and the score, and it immediately made me think of Men in Black and how I wish this movie was more like that movie. A Life Foundation massive shuttle crashes in East Malaysia, and we're going to revisit this because I have questions. But meanwhile, Riz Ahmed and Jenny Slate, and by the way, she's Jenny Slate through half of these notes. I don't bother
Jenny
with her
Slate,
character name.
Man. She is ridiculous in this movie. I remember being like, who is this? Like, I couldn't place her, and I'm like, the one thing I remembered her from was the I Threw It on the Ground Lonely Island music video where she plays the girlfriend, and I'm
oh shit, I didn't even know. For me, she's in Parks and Rec, and she's fantastic in that. Yeah.
Yes, I see her all over. No, once you see her, you'll see her everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and of course, immediately I had questions about, like, who's, because Riz Ahmed and Jenny Slate are watching this across the world, and I was like, whose camera? Because it's the Malaysian EMT. Who's recording this?
Whatever. Oh, I know. Yeah, in real time.
Yes, in real time. The one astronaut is still alive. They dropped the name Jameson. That doesn't mean anything. We're going to move on. Cool, maybe? I don't know.
Right, I like it, but, like, no. I honestly, I've missed it. I didn't. Like, I was watching this movie, and I missed it. And I will tell you, the stars and the spaceship, forgot that was even the intro. Like, yes. I was like, is this like an extended edition or something? Like,
yeah, yeah, wait, wait.
But no, that's how it opens.
Yeah, that's like, how it opens. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I do, we'll get into this a little bit because especially watching it then, there's a lot of like blanks that like, what, Sony, in your brain, what do you think is going to happen? And now living in the future, I did. It's like, oh, what seems to be happening, which is No Way Home is making all of the money. People want Andrew Garfield back. And now we get to like backdoor, like, oh, actually, this is Andrew Garfield's universe.
Please. Oh, yes. Yes. And yeah. Yeah. You could tell like there's a lot of placeholders. Like they won't. I don't even think we see the Daily Bugle in this movie.
No, we don't. Well, and getting that too, we get a name drop for the Daily Globe, which I didn't even remember was Eddie Brock's original.
Yeah, 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 that I liked. I was like, all right. And the whole like they ran you out of New York, and I'm like, all right,
yeah,
that explains
super vague.
The...
super vague to beef TBD.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Which, oh man, whatever. We'll get in that in a second. So. Astronauts alive, it's Jameson. The ambulance tries to take Jameson, and the symbiote is hitching a ride in his body, and it fucks everybody up. Like, Jameson wakes up and he murders everybody, and the bus crashes, and then the EMT, which I guess is Jameson dead now, whatever. EMT rips it open.
Yep.
Put a pin in the fact that this, I'm just going to refer to it as Riot because that's what we find out it is later.
Yeah.
But based on what we learn about how symbiotes operate in this universe, I have questions. Anyway, Bruce out the back. The leg is injured and it heals up immediately. Just as a side note, I'm not a huge fan of like insta healing. I don't think it.
Yeah, like, yeah. Kate's integrates it into his Venom run in a nice way that I kind of like appreciate because like, you know, most of these superheroes all like in the Marvel universe, if you have a superpower, there's like a built-in healing factor that's also established. Yes. Like just as a
Flash
consequence.
You run fast, but also heal fast for other.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Daredevil even has a healing factor, but Eddie Brock is a dude. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if he's on fire or he falls, like it's over for him. So you gotta give him, you gotta have the suit fix it. And I'm okay. I'm a little bit more okay with that. There are a lot of things I'm not okay with in this movie. The healing, I'm like, I get it.
Although, I just feel like, I mean, even if I would even be okay if we said like Wolverine's healing takes a day,
right?
listen, he can lose an eye and it'll heal in like a week, but how fast does your eye grow back? You know what I mean? It's still a healing factor.
That's still a healing factor. Yeah, that's true.
anyway, that's just a personal preference on my end. And this is where we get unceremoniously the Venom title card. I guess the movie has started now.
I love that. Just there's no good sting. Just like that happened, and then they're like, oh right, we have to put the title in the movie.
Yeah. I guess
how about now?
Guess what? It's Venom. So we're now in San Francisco. We see Michelle Williams as Anne Wang. Wake up Tom Hardy's Eddie Brock, and this is really they treat it like a horror reveal, like a sting, and it's just like, what it's like the movie's like guessing at what it's trying to do, like, is this the thing that, whatever. Anyway, we find out Eddie and Anne are engaged, and Eddie has a big meeting that day. And before we move any further, two things. One, I love Tom Hardy. I think he's a really talented performer. If nothing else, even no matter what you say about his performances, they're always interesting. They're always engaging. Like, I know we like to dunk on Tom Hardy's Bane voice. But I actually think his performance in that movie is really interesting and like really engaging.
Really,
like, I actually think he's pretty good in that movie. And if nobody's
great in everything, except for Shin Zan. He's terrible as Hogarth's
clone. Yeah, I haven't even seen that. I know what you're talking about, but I haven't seen that movie.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
If anybody's seen Peaky Blinders, he is really good in that, although it is one of those like turn on the subtitles and what is he saying.
That's half the cast in that movie, in that show.
But for people that, as of this recording just yesterday, Cillian Murphy as Oppenheimer from Nolan's movie was circulating, and Cillian Murphy's so fucking good in that show. Anyway,
part two,
what accent do we think Tom Hardy's going for here?
I don't know about you, I think we're on the same page here. I think Tom Hardy thinks this is like a Little Shop of Horrors homage.
Okay. All right.
Like a Feed Me Seymour kind of situation. And I think he's channeling like Seymour Krelborn, where he's like, oh, it's like kind of Woody Allen, but all because I'm from New York. But also I'm like meek and timid. And when I get my confidence, my voice turns more into like confident voice. I genuinely think he's going for like a Seymour, like
God damn it! I hope that's true. Thing. I actually really love that. So I hope that is well, true.
There's only one person thinking about this movie, and it's Tom Hardy. Because
yes.
like,
yeah.
And by the way, yeah, right.
Go. Like, say what you're gonna say.
No, he just like you could tell from like his Venom voice, and then of course how it like evolves like from this. I forgot because I'm you know I've been so used to Let There Be Carnage in his voice that it's much more subdued and monstrous in this movie than it is by the time he gets to Let There Be Carnage. But like. You could hear it kind of evolve as he's getting having fun with it, but I think he really like that's the voice that like for him he's like that's peak Eddie Brock like that's Eddie Brock's voice with confidence. So yeah, I think he's the only one thinking about the movie. He's the only one being like, he's the only one it's like yeah. it's stupid. Okay, I'm getting paid a lot of money to make a stupid movie. Got it. It's like Jeremy Irons. Like oh it's Dungeons and Dragons. I got it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm. Listen, I know the assignment. Okay.
Right.
It is. Oh, fuck, man. It's tough that like you always want like so many superhero movies are kind of like as far as their themes or whatever are kind of anonymous. That's just like hey, here's the thing from the comic. Go.
Yeah.
And so you want them to have like a specific take. And the Venom movies, you and I have talked about this. The Venom movies have a take. It's like what if it was a buddy movie. Which is a take. It's not the take I want, but it is a decision. A decision was made.
It's not even a take from the comics. Like there's
no
Venom has had what 100 limited series. He's been a special agent. He's been a lethal protector. He's been like a space cop. He's been everything. And that never have they done like Venom and he are like Butch and Sundance or like Turner and Hooch. That is what this movie is though. And they're like, we're going for it.
We're committing to it, and listen, it's made him a lot of money. So who are we to poo poo it?
Listen, people like it.
Yeah, so
85% or whatever.
We get a montage of Eddie being a reporter for the Brock Report, which gives me very much Vice vibes. Like they watch a couple of Vice videos, and they're like, "That's what reporting is."
Yep.
And it's just a bummer because it's like, yeah, I get that. Like Vice is kind of like edgy, but also like if you watch the reporters. Are like doing their job, man. They're like fucking. They're doing the work anyway.
No, well, you could tell this is a movie where they were just like, we don't really have a script for this scene. Like, there's a scene between Ahmed and Jenny. Is it Jenny Frisson? What's her name?
The Jenny Slate is the actress. Her
Jenny
character's
Slate.
Name is Skirth.
Skirth.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Drake and Skirth have a scene where they have an interact, and I'm like, there is no script in this scene.
Nope.
And it's like. There's a lot of that in this movie.
Dude, there's at least a week of shooting that was just Riz Ahmed wandering around the set that they had. And like, hey, now you found this. Now you find this. And the funny thing is, he is unfortunately,
good.
Like, this is not his best performance. But he himself, like, Sound of Metal is such a fucking good movie. And he is incredible in it. And it's like, fuck, man. Good for you getting this paycheck.
Right. Yeah. This is literally just cut a check because he is... That character should not be in half the scenes he's in.
Yeah.
Like he's constantly I'm the head of this billion-dollar corporation, and I'm here, boots on the ground, in this scene with, like, security guards. What?
Yeah. So, we get the montage of the Brock Report. So, Brock shows up at the building that is... his studio, whoever the fuck he works for, we don't even know. Is this a TV station?
It's not clear at all. They want the you're fired scene. They want the boardroom scene. Like they don't want to explain it. Like this is just naked greed. Like you can see like Avi Arad is just it's literally like Avi Arad has been chasing a Venom movie for 30 years.
Yeah,
and then it's like you told someone. They could. It's like the dog. You know, it's like when you're like, we're going out, and you have the leash, and they can't contain themselves, and like Arad and Pascal are just like, we finally got to make a Venom movie, and they're not thinking about things like scripts or or direction, and they're just like, just let's make it, and so that's how you get things like this.
Yeah, well, and it's tough too because it's like, and it's something again that this is the most naked example of it, but it's something that I think is a problem with a lot of blockbusters. Is that everything, and this is not a knock on the writers. This is more a comment on the system around them. Yes. Everything feels like a first draft. It feels like here's the outline, and then they were like, let's go shoot, and you're like, hold on, what are you talking about?
You need like David Cope to come in and like fill that those lines in with dialogue.
Yeah.
Like, they're not gonna do that.
Yeah, nope, not for this one.
Let the actors do it. Tom Hardy is so good.
Yeah.
We'll just let him dictate everything else.
And everybody... And also, we'll talk about this more, but Michelle Williams is too fucking good for this movie.
Yes.
Michelle Williams is... Because Tom Hardy's doing great work playing a cartoon character.
Yeah.
Michelle Williams somehow, in the middle of all this, finds a person?
Yeah.
Like, Anne is a person. And she functions like a person, and it's like, and she does little things like Michelle Williams, like, God fucking damn it. How did they get you for this? Anyway.
Her and Dave are my favorite characters in the movie.
her husband?
Fiance or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I love Dave. He's just like, he's just down.
is it Dave or Dan? I think it's,
oh, it's Dan?
Dr. Dan Lewis. It doesn't matter.
It does. Okay, so it's Dan. Matter. I'm sorry. It's, I literally
it's
was like,
placeholder name.
It starts with a D. I'm close enough.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Eddie's pulled up on his motorbike, and the guy's like, hey, man, you can't park there. And Eddie's like, oh, I can't. It's just whatever. And he just blows past, and the guy's like, oh, Eddie smiles. And I'm like, no, make him fucking move his fucking bike. What the fuck are you doing?
But, like, that's one of those things where it's like, hey, we have a bit of business, get the bike, blah, blah, blah. But we don't actually resolve that scene. It's like Jack and Jill, where it's like you expect something to happen, and then instead nothing happens. And this one, it's like the security guard won't let it. There's not a scene where he's like, oh, you. It ends with him going like, but move your bike.
Yeah, but but seriously, man, move your fucking bike.
Right.
And then we call back later, and this is such a this annoys me so much in blockbusters, where a character will repeat a line from earlier as if it means anything. Like it's like that doesn't
it's,
whatever.
But it's also weirdly subversive, because like the security guard's like, why did you say that? Like, because like, so, Eddie knows he's in the movie, but nobody else does. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's like,
so
free guy.
His boss is played, and I'm probably gonna mispronounce this middle name, and I'm sorry, Ron Cephas Jones, who's also plays Bobby Fish in Luke Cage. Really great actor. He's been in a bunch of stuff. Really, he's not credited. Like, I had to go to Luke Cage, find him on Luke Cage, then go.
Yeah, because I was like, this dude's in things. What is his name? I couldn't find it on the IMDb, and then I'm like, why is he in this movie?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he is so specific and so distinct for a character that can be played by Joel McHale. Like, he can be played by anybody. And because he's just playing boss you kind of sympathize with but should not like because he fires the protagonist.
Yes.
And it's just like him. And, mm-hmm. and it's like, you know how like Sony like randomly has like people on retainer and they got to put them in places. I assume like it's just like they were making some other movie and they didn't, and it got like canceled, and he's like, I'm still under contract, and they were like, oh, we'll put him in here, I guess, like just to fulfill it. I don't. Yeah. It's really weird. He's
and
just,
also the way it's shot is real weird. It's like clearly him and Tom Hardy never operated on the same plane of like there was two different days.
Two different days against green screens. Yeah, he might not even be in a room. It's really
for all we know. So we do get a little thing that because they're talking about the view that heights aren't Eddie's thing. That we'll come back later, but it doesn't matter. So Jack, his boss, makes Eddie interview Carlton Drake, and this is some of those boilerplate exposition. It's just like standard again, like placeholder dialogue. So now we have Eddie and Ann are having dinner together, and we find out that her firm, she's a lawyer, and her firm represents Drake. Ooh, how convenient.
The
firm she works for. And I will say, the one thing that really does work in this movie is I think the scenes between Tom Hardy and Michelle Williams work. Like, they have genuine chemistry. I buy into that relationship.
It's a damn shame, too, because the two of them, like, you know, like, you don't want them to be together because you want Venom to happen.
Yes.
And yet every scene they're in is great, but like it's working against the movie, so mm-hmm. it's really frustrating.
And so this is where we get the Daily Globe. She mentioned the Daily Globe incident, and it is a bummer. Like, it's like, oh fuck, man. I'm going to talk about this more. I don't like that it's two symbiote. I don't like that it's two goop monsters fighting at the end in the first movie. I know. Listen, there's that stupid. I shouldn't say stupid. I know it's a big deal, but that Save the Cat book that became like everybody's screenwriting bible, and it talks about, like, you know, the problem with the first Spider-Man is that Spider-Man's powers and Green Goblin's powers are different. It should be the one power, and every studio superhero movie from there on is like, they have to be the same thing.
Yeah,
Iron Man has to fight Iron Man guys.
Ant-Man fights evil Ant-Man.
Yeah,
Hulk
fights
Hulks. It's like, that is so lame.
Yeah, and for me, it's like, no, you hold on that. You don't open with Zod. You build with Zod. You put Zod in your Trinity. You have Superman fight non-Superman people so that when he gets there, you're like, oh shit, how is Superman going to fucking fight himself?
Stakes. And with Spider-Man, it's fun. You want to see Spider-Man fight a guy with like 8 arms. That's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and Spider-Man is the one, weirdly, even though Spider-Man is the reference in that book, the reference point in that book, Spider-Man's the one that gets off with it because other than Venom, none of his villains have his powers. And even Venom is different enough. Mm-hmm. That it's not like a one-to-one situation. And Spider-Man has some of the best rogues in the thing, so maybe that should be a clue.
right? There is a villain for this movie and that they could have used that is like that has CG, could have spent the budget, that wasn't a goop monster, and it's a shame they didn't do it, but it's like it wouldn't have been as bombastic as two symbiotes fighting each other because the whole thing is based on Lethal Protector, but like not... Mm-hmm. And it's like, what's in Lethal Protector? They had Carlton Drake owns these big, crazy diggers.
Yeah.
Venom fights a digger at the end. Carlton Drake pilots it. That's what you do. You do a big digger.
You could even be like, I know the jury, big Venom, which a bunch of Iron Men's, which I had to be chomping at the bit on that one.
Seriously. And also, you know, there was a conversation. There was no way. They weren't like, can we do Iron Man?
The story, his Daily Globe story, involves Sin Eater. Nobody gives a shit about Sin Eater, but maybe he comes back for revenge on Eddie, whatever. And I think think truthfully, if you're coming, I know this Buck's tradition, but the villain of the movie should be Venom. Like it should be the symbiote and Eddie, like it should be like a fucking horror movie. And he's dealing with the monster inside of him. And then maybe at the end, because you want it to be a super franchise, they come to some sort of agreement. But the antagonist of the movie should be your main character fundamentally. And Pixar has done a lot of Pixar, a kids movie company, has done a lot of great work with that between Woody and Joy and Inside Out. Anyway.
Yep.
That's not the movie we're dealing with. So Eddie and Ann, after their nice dinner at a bougie restaurant, go home to fuck because that's what, again, the standard placeholder, that's how couples interactions work in these movies. You have dinner at nice places and you fuck after. That's what couples do.
That's right.
You have expositional dialogue in between there. That's what relationships exist in these movies to do.
Yes. The fucking cements the relationship. They are together.
They are together. Nobody has ever had a hard day and is too tired to have sex in these movies. he then breaks in. So that night he wakes up and Eddie is lured like a siren song to Anne's computer through pictures of her screensaver of them together. He's like, oh, that's nice. and then he decides a little email notification happens in her corner and he's like, oh, this is sweet. I'm going to break into her fucking computer and read her fucking emails. God fucking damn it. This is really... Like, I like that the movie kind of doesn't let Eddie off the hook of this, but I don't know if it really commits to, like, how egregious this is. Like, this is...
Right. Yeah, the movie wants us to forgive him, but Anne does not. She's
this is, like, a major breach of trust.
But, like, how else is he going to get the information? It's one of those things where it's like... Well, you can see the conversation where they're like, I mean, it kind of makes him a scumbag, and it's like, well, I mean, but, like, how else is he going to get the information... Like, we could have him listen in on her conversation on a phone, but, like, that would take too much time. We'd have to do another day of shooting. Forget it. How about he just looks at the computer?
I think superhero movies are pretty bad at this, is commit to him being a scumbag. He's a villain in the comics. Commit to him being a bad person, and he learns... See, there's these things, I don't know if you heard of them, called arcs, right?
Yeah.
And so your character could start at this point, and then you could get him to another point, and that's actually dramatically interesting.
Yeah. Whatever. You know, one of the number one superhero TV shows of all time started with a character you hate at the end of the movie he starred in.
Yes.
And he's a completely different character at the end of it, and everyone loves it. So
yeah, because we're watching him grow as a person.
Right.
he killed ostensibly one of the main characters of the movie he was in.
Right? Hard to believe. Anyway.
God, I love the way that we're not talking about that, but I do love the way they kept bringing back that scene to just pummel John Cena with it. Like, hey, remember when you killed the one good guy in that movie?
Yeah, remember when you lost the audience?
Yeah.
At that moment?
Yeah. Let's keep revisiting that. Anyway.
Yeah.
The Life Foundation, we see it. It's obviously... It's on like a mountainside, overlooking the Golden Gate Bridge.
It's Tony Stark's house.
It's Tony Stark's house, but it's also like it's very hit or miss, the CGI. Like the first time we see it, it literally just looks like they pasted it up there. Like,
yeah.
And I do have some questions about the layout of it throughout this discussion, but we'll get there in a minute. So we see Drake. This is our first introduction to Riz Ahmed as Carlton Drake, and he's speaking to a group of tour group of children, which is like, what?
Oh my god! Yeah, that's a scene we can cut. That one.
Yeah. Because we're clearly going for Elon Musk vibes in this, and it's interesting that even in that, where it's the villain, this is still how somehow works as like propaganda for people like that, because he actually is. These movies can't work because Elon Musk is not a genius. Sorry, right. Spoilers for the kids at home. He's not a genius. He had a lot of money, and he was able to pay people to do the things he wanted to do.
Yeah.
But in these movies, Lex Luthor, Carlton Drake, all these motherfuckers actually are really smart at things.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess to make them even remotely compelling.
Yeah.
But why is he talking to a group of kids? I love the nonsense of this scene, because a girl raises her hands and all the kids act as if she farted loud in front of everybody. They're like,
yeah.
And he's like, listen. He doesn't answer the girl's question. Never even asks what it is. Listen.
No.
Don't let people silence you. He goes on this weird rant about being silenced and then gives her a pin and then walks away.
Yeah.
And it's like, boy, you didn't. What was her question, though?
Now, maybe that's brilliant. I don't think it is, but it could be, where it's like, is this movie a secret like genius? No, it's not. But like, yes. But ascribing meaning, where it's like, that's the brilliance of manipulative people. And like in positions of power, where he's like, no, he made it about him.
Mm-hmm.
He made her think she had value, but also completely avoided responsibility.
Yes.
And then extricated himself from the situation before anyone noticed.
Yes.
That's kind of brilliant. But
it is brilliant if it was intentional.
If it was intentional, also, which it most certainly is not.
It was most certainly it is not. And this is also one of those moments where it's like, I feel like the kind of the jokey nature of the MCU can be hit or miss.
Yeah.
But I do feel like this is one of those scenes where that would have benefited, where he's like, he goes on this whole thing and finally goes to the little girl, what was your question? And they pick like the dumbest question.
Where's the bathroom?
Like, yeah, like, where's the bathroom? It's like, oh, okay. And then,
give me my pin back.
Yeah. So we then get to this, the most unhinged interview I've ever seen on screen. Like fucking, how much blow is Eddie Brock supposed to have done right before this discussion? Because he just starts like fucking hitting Drake with all this stuff. No sources. No, like nothing. He doesn't.
He is a Moonlander denier interviewer. Yeah. Like he has the energy of that kid who like who accosted what was it, Neil Armstrong Aldrin, and was like, the moon landing's fake and you're a faker. Like this dude just goes in. And I love like how it's couched in this thing where they're like, just go there and do this puff piece editorial. Yeah. Like, what if you know he's completely lost it and you have to like dress him down in your office to warn him not to do it? Just assign it to somebody else.
Yeah. Like, not only that, even if it hasn't completely lost it, this is clearly not what you pay him to do.
Right.
So why him?
Well, yeah. And also, it's not live.
Yeah, yes.
You could cut out the part that is embarrassing.
Yeah. At one point, Eddie's like reading from something. He's like, it says right here that you're using unhoused people for your drug test. And like, what are you, says what, where, what?
Right. Was
and I couldn't tell.
Report? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know what he read from the email. I don't know what he's referencing. No, there's no way for him. Like, this isn't a gotcha. This is, you look like a legit lunatic. Like, security should be escorting you from the premises. Because you might be armed.
Seriously. And then it's like, and then they find out like, oh, you're like a legitimate member of the press? Like, how did you get a job here? And what's great about that is I love the setup where they're like, okay, so you're a loser and you've been running a town and like we had to take all these risks and all this stuff. And they gave him a very successful show. Like he's,
they want
to have their cake and eat it too so bad in this movie constantly where they're like, we want to hammer home that Eddie's a loser. But also we can't have him be such a loser that he doesn't ride motorcycles and have a successful career. So he has to have both.
Yes.
He's Schrodinger's protagonist. And it's like, it's just, it's constantly at odds with itself, and it's just because it's again. I keep picturing Pascal and Alvarez just being like, "Yes, I just got to get to the part where he turns into Venom."
Yeah. Oh, but boy, how do we take our time on that?
Yeah.
So we do learn in this that Drake created a gene therapy when he was 19.
why? Like, and why what's does he also have to weird? Be a genius.
Yeah, I don't know. And we also explained that he was born in the UK. I assume to justify that Riz Ahmed is British, except his accent in this.
I thought they said he was born in Hong Kong or something.
No, I think he was born in London, I think they said.
Oh, okay.
And either way, it's like, but his accent's flawless.
Yeah.
So I don't know why we're having to, the one we should try and justify is Tom Hardy a little bit.
Yeah.
Like,
right?
Anyway.
Yeah, that's problematic right there. That's
yeah, so Eddie's boss, when he's firing him, you know, for a smart guy, you're a real dumbass. And this is, it reminds me of that moment, I think it's my favorite moment in the Defenders show, is when Stick calls Danny Rand a thundering dumbass, and it's like, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, everyone was like, yes, thank you, Stick. Yeah. You completely nailed it.
Stick nailed it and won.
You know, they wrote that like long after the reviews were in on Iron Fist. They were like, yeah. Put in a thing dressing down Iron Fist because he sucks.
Yeah, because we none of it. Whoops. That was a big old whoops. I just picked up the new Iron Fist.
How is it? I haven't read it yet.
It's a lot. The new Iron Fist is an already established character, so we have to do a lot of legwork to take him from point A. He's that new Swordsmaster, that new one of the new characters they tried to introduce.
And
so we have to get him from the point A to point B of Iron Fist. It's like, poof, couldn't just be a new guy. Couldn't just be like,
that's too bad.
Anyway, but it feels like a clear, like, hey, we want to bring Charlie Cox back and Kristen Ritter back, but not Danny Rand.
But not Danny Rand. No.
Anyway, Anne meets Eddie outside. Because Anne's ability to travel where she needs to be is such, she has her own superpower. We need to revisit it, but then whatever. Of course, she is pissed because
totally.
Of course she is. And she breaks up with him because, yes, you should. That is the correct.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's scorched earth, too. She doesn't even go, like, we need to talk.
No.
Or, like, we need to break. Like, she's like, we're broken up. The engagement is off. Like, I don't care how
that's
much.
That's not even a misunderstanding. That's a, like, no, you fucking detonated my. You didn't even talk to me. What the fuck are you even thinking? You gonzo lunatic. I don't know why anybody reacts weird to Eddie post-symbiote because he's already a fucking madman here.
Yeah, completely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, him. The only thing is he sweats more when he has
the symbiote. He sweats so much because it's eating his heart atrophies. Anyway.
It's eating his heart. Oh, my God.
Anyway, the symbiotes arrive at the Life Foundation. These little tubes, like the tubes you at the bank that they used to have that you like send
stuff
over.
Yeah, the pneumatic
tubes. God, I miss those.
Yeah,
I wish
checks in there.
I wish I had those in my house. I wish instead of text, that's how we communicated with each other.
Yes. Yeah. More complicated, but still way more.
So
more
cool.
Classic.
As a kid, you're like, oh, and then sometimes they used to like put when you're at the bank, they put lollipop in there. Oh my God, it was magic.
Yes.
Life was so much simpler then. Let's go back to the 90s. There were no problems, no notes.
at least there was more money.
So the Malaysian EMT, we're back to there. They eat
that goes forever,
it
man.
Sure does. They eat a raw eel out of a meat market. The guy, he's a cook or whatever, protests. And of course he does because like what the anyway. She kills that person again. This is riot,
right?
And then a bunch of street thugs who are just around decide.
Yeah,
like,
and then the security force of this open market show up, and we have a fight scene. That's literally just like. A bunch of stuntmen walk in, and there is a fight scene.
It's not even a fight scene. She just killed, just like, CG, you're dead now.
Right, yeah. And have you looked into this? Because I didn't, because this movie requires no effort.
Yeah.
But, like, I assumed that this movie was shot R, and they, like, softened it down.
Like, that sounds right. I did not look into it, but I know there was talk of it being R, and God, I wish I could have been in a fly on the wall in these conversations because in a lot of ways that makes a lot of sense because it's a good way to differentiate yourself from – like Deadpool had a lot of success with that. It differentiated from what they were doing. But there had to have been – this was only, 4 years ago now?
Yeah.
So they probably were in conversations at least about No Way Home at this point. And so it's like, let's – make it so it can fit in.
Let's dial it down.
Because, I mean, the best way I would imagine for you to market your standalone Venom and Morbius movies other than having Spider-Man in them is making them R.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So now we cut to 6 months later because this movie's pacing is
for no
all
reason.
Over the
we're
map.
Like 6 months later. Like, what?
Yeah. We're going to get into that because we'll get into that. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Jenny Slate. Is experimenting with the symbiote that bonds with a rabbit, and apparently we learned that they need to bond with another thing to live in this oxygen-rich atmosphere.
Why?
But they need an exact match, which I don't know why they complicate things.
Totally.
I guess it's to give them something to experiment, other than having a bunch of Venoms running around before Venom. This is just to delay. This is the delaying tactic.
Yeah, that's it. That's what it is. Because we also want to, because like homelessness was a big thing in the Lethal Protector book, and it's all cosmetic. Like Carlton Drake, Roland, or whatever his name is, like Reese, yeah. the security force guy. He's from the comic. Homeless people, Lethal Protector, Venom, like Solo, San Francisco, all this stuff.
Yeah.
From that 6-issue limited series. Except for Spider-Man. But it's all just like, we want to use homeless people. But even then, like, he befriends kind of one homeless person and then doesn't mourn her death.
Nope.
And it's like, so you have to make it matter in your context. You can't just put it in there being like, check mark.
Yeah.
We did all the stuff I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Like, ugh.
So, anyway,
sorry.
Yeah. So we got they need to bond with somebody. This doesn't make sense on a lot of levels because also based on what we believe about alien life now, they're probably not even composed of DNA, so I don't even know why. Whatever.
Yeah.
I also have to. So if the symbiotes need hosts to live,
according to this.
What have we been doing for 6 months? And this is going to be the next few things we're going to talk about. It's like, wait, what have these characters been up to for 6 months? Because it seems like this is the next day.
Because Eddie has to, the only thing that changes is he gets an apartment.
Mm-hmm.
But Riot traveling from Malaysia to America when he boards a plane via little girl does not take 6 months.
Oh, God. I didn't even think about the riot of it all. I was just too hung up. Oh, my God. Anyway, yeah. So, of course, Drake demands human trials because he's the bad guy. So that's what what he did. So now...
immediately. Yeah.
We catch up with Eddie at the bar, and he asks the bartender, like, man, do you ever feel like your life is a monumental screw-up? And the bartender's like, nah, man. Fucking calm down. Drake comes on the news. He asks him to change. They're talking about the new rocket launch because we need to set that up for the finale. And Eddie leaves, and he says what is probably my favorite line in the whole goddamn fucking movie. I love this line so much. He says, I'm going to go home, chase myself around the room, and play hard to get.
Yeah.
I don't know if they wrote it. I don't know if Tom Hardy just made that up. Made me so fucking happy. I was like, that's fucking funny.
That's a good line. Yeah. No, there's a lot of like weird little bits of business that I like. Oh, no, there's like three. But like, that's one of them.
Yeah.
That one, and I actually kind of liked Eddie and Annie's interplay in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Like when she's hitting him with the pillow. I was just like, that's kind of cute. Like, that's a genuinely cute thing that I believe happens and haven't seen in a movie yet.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a cliche obvious scene, but it's punctuated by like something kind of fun.
Yeah.
And that's this movie, except nothing's fun about it.
Yeah. So he's walking home. This is where we meet the unhouseman you were talking about earlier. And he gives her she's taken all the papers that you can get for free, and he gives her, and she asks for five, he gives her $20 for the paper, but don't do a song. And what's interesting about this whole sequence is this is where you start your movie. You literally start with Eddie in the bar, and and all the breaking up with Anne, all that's backstory that you fill in through the interactions.
That's right.
Because this is such it was weird when the scene came up, because it's like, this is such, actually, we're like 30 minutes in the movie, and this is such a good encapsulation of like, oh, this is who Eddie is. This is where you begin. And I think this is a problem of a lot of like blockbusters. Like, honestly, it's one of my issues with Doctor Strange. Like, don't start with Doctor Strange as a surgeon. That part's boring. I don't care about that.
Yeah. Nobody cares. Yeah. That's why he's Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Like, just cut to him. Like, just use the several hours of footage you got of a waste of an intro and relegate it to flashbacks.
Or conversations,
or conversation.
He could be at Carmitage. Somebody there asks him about what he was doing before that. I was a surgeon. Boom, fill that stuff in. And then also gets weird, the weird timeline stuff of like, how long was he at Carmitage? Like weeks? Like how long did it take him to become whatever?
Exactly.
Yeah, don't start. Start a media res. Keep going.
Start your stories where they begin.
Yeah. So anyway, This is where he goes into Mrs. Chen's convenience store.
Bodega, whatever.
Yeah. And of course, she is robbed by a thug played by Sam Medina, who I've met in my journeys through Hollywood. And of course, Eddie kind of hides like a chump. In his defense, what is he gonna do?
But like, by the way, Mrs. Chen, you know, she's concerned, but like, she doesn't have the demeanor of a woman who has just pointed a gun at.
Yes, I will say in her defense, this seems to be because he talks about protection money. This is a pattern in this movie where something in fucking sane happens and people are like, oh wow. And it's like, right. You just saw one dude bite off another dude's head. I feel like the reaction should be stronger.
I feel, or you did it.
Yes.
And I feel like your reaction should be bigger.
Yeah, it should be. Everybody's kind of like, well, I guess this is the thing now.
Right. Everyone's on Dramamine in this movie.
Yes. Eddie goes up. Upstairs to his apartment, and he passes his neighbor who has long metal hair and is making out with his girlfriend. He's like a dick, and it's like, well, God, calm down a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe
shit.
You know something. I don't know. That feels a little aggressive. I don't. He's just making out.
Well, it's one of those dudes who's just like, you know what? Like Eddie's on his way to becoming an incel.
Yeah.
I had a job and I had sex and I had a great money, all this money. And now I got nothing. I'm watching other people who have the same crappy apartment as me.
Yeah.
And he's getting laid too.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, fuck that guy. That would be more believable than what happens next. What happens next is a montage of Eddie trying to find a job, which is like, again, what have you been doing for 6 months?
And what year is it where you're circling Wanda?
Yeah.
Like it's 1965.
What would make more sense if he was on a bunch of forums posting like fake news.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, anybody want to pay me to make up news?
Yeah, exactly. One of the people he gets rejected by is Barney Bushkin, who is from the comics, part of the Venom's original appearances. And Eddie tries to listen to a self-help tape, but is interrupted by his neighbor playing loud music. Ah, that crazy neighbor.
Damn it.
That'll
come back.
Yeah, we're going to call this back later because he's angry, but not able to. He doesn't have the strength to express himself through violence, exactly. Which is how men are meant to express themselves. Drake, we're back at the Life Foundation. He gives a big speech about how this moment is first contact. He loves his speeches. And they bring out this poor, I'm going to say, he's just an unhoused guy. He looks like possibly a burnout. It's hard to say. And this scene is why you hire Riz Ahmed for is this one scene, because he talks the guy down, talking about the story of Isaac and Jacob from the Bible, but how he perceives Isaac, who's the son in that situation, as the hero, and of course the guy he's talking to is the Isaac in this situation. He's trying to calm him down, and you'd think, well, that would make Drake Jacob in this scenario, which is a weird kind of dad complex, but no, that's not what Drake is going for, because he loops around. He's like, you know, God abandoned us, but I won't. It's like, you're God in this. Cool. Cool for you, guy.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. And so, of course, the symbiote tries to bond with the guy, and it kills him. And again, what does this mean for Riot and how Riot operates? And also,
I guess the lucky thing, they're a genetic match or whatever that's supposed to mean.
He's able to see his genetic matches or something, I guess. And also,
I guess,
what does this mean for the plot point in Venom 2, where Venom is just hopping from body to body? Are those people dying?
I mean, he's killing those people. Yeah, definitely.
Cool.
I thought he was killing them. Yeah.
Cool. That's so cool.
What a hero.
Yeah, what a gosh dang champ. Eddie goes back to the convenience store. The unhoused lady, she has a name. I have it later, but I don't have it in the notes right now. She is gone. I wonder why.
Oh, no.
Maybe he should investigate. Maybe that's a way that he could get involved with Drake. Anyway, that's not what we're doing.
Nope.
He starts talking to his... This scene actually plays kind of funny. He starts talking about how he's an investigative journalist, and he was able to follow people, and he was good on it. Which, again, based on what we've seen of him so far... I call bullshit on that.
Total bullshit. Yeah, he is the least subtle person in the movie.
Yeah, but what we find out he's talking to is Jenny Slate's character, Dr. Skirth.
Yep.
And she tells him what Drake is doing. He's kidnapping poor people and experimenting on them.
That reads like an improv line.
Yes.
By the way, this is what I'm talking about, where it's like, so we go to Mrs. Chen's, he goes to his apartment where things suck, goes back to Mrs. Chen. Like,
yeah.
Why doesn't all that just happen in Mrs. Chen's like convenience store?
Well,
because
we need to establish the homeless lady, and then establish that she's.
But we
gone
meet her on the outside. Oh, what if we do like we do really fast? Where it's like he meets the homeless lady, he goes into Mrs. Chen's, he talks to the girl, he walks out, and he notices she's gone, but her stuff is still there.
Yes, I also would think. I would probably cut Jenny Slate from this movie and have the missing,
need to be in that movie.
Missing unhoused lady be what makes him start investigating Drake.
Yes.
And that's our intro to this whole situation.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Eddie tells her to fuck off, and he frames it like, listen, I interviewed Drake once and it ruined my life. It's like, wait,
you
time out.
Ruined your life. Yeah. But that is Eddie Brock. Eddie Brock deflecting is actually pretty in character. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah. But it's just funny. It's like, no, man, listen, I'm on the same page with you. Drake's a bad dude, but also that what happened to you was 100% your fault.
Yeah. Oh, can we also mention, like, he keeps talking about Drake being a bad dude, and he has no evidence to support that.
None.
And it's just, and like, if I were in anyone's position where I'm talking to Eddie about this, I might go like, is it because he has a lot more money than you and you're really resentful of him?
Yeah.
Like, is that what's going on here? Because like, do you have no evidence to support that he's a bad person, and you never bring it up?
Yeah.
Like, you just say he's bad, and you have a feeling about it.
And then he's like, listen, man, I read the script. I know what he's doing on these other scenes.
Yeah, you should see him 100 pages in.
Yeah, he's a fucking bad guy. Eddie shows up at Anne's place, like a creepy stalker. He meets her new guy, Dan. Dan is a fan. Dan's
yeah.
Great. I'm with you. I
love
Dan. Dan's great. Another person that's surprisingly chill with the things that happen in this movie.
Right? Really chill. Like where he's like, let me give you a free MRI.
Yeah. And she correctly points out this is all Eddie's fault. She's on top of it. And this is a scene that I feel like could be more interesting. Eddie looks at the Life Foundation building from the bridge, and it's like, ah, fuck, this is too much for this movie, but if we incorporated Eddie's suicidal, like if he was on the bridge thinking about like, this is it for me, and then he sees the Life Foundation, like, I got one last card to play.
Yeah! I love that.
Anyway, Jenny Slate, he calls Jenny Slate, she goes to sneak him in, starts again more exposition. Poor Jenny Slate getting all the exposition. She's like, oh, because of climate change and overpopulation, I want to take a moment to remind everybody at home, movies love to trot this stuff out. Climate change 100% is a problem, and people like Carlton Derrick are a huge driver of that problem without having to kidnap people to do it. Overpopulation is not overpopulation. as much as Thanos and people like to trot out overpopulation, we have a problem with a small percentage of people taking up a huge amount of resources. That is a problem as opposed to the amount of people.
Right. Yeah. No, we can feed everybody.
Yeah,
we
can.
Don't.
We just need to some kids at home. This might be too. We just need to redistribute. Things
ooh.
Like ooh, wealth and resources. Oh my God. Anyway, guys.
So we're gonna go to another planet.
Could you imagine? Listen, that's all Eddie needed. Here's how we're gonna rewrite that interview scene with Drake. Eddie's calm, collected, and he just mentions redistributing wealth. Drake would lose his fucking mind. His eyes would melt out of his head.
Yeah, get the hell out of here! I'm gonna destroy your life, scorched earth.
Yeah,
that would be amazing. But no, instead, Carlton Drake is looking for interstellar colonization. We're gonna drop that 45 minutes into the picture.
He's like, which I will say, the idea of one of these wealthy assholes thinking it is easier to colonize another planet than to just fix things here is believable.
Give people more money and food.
What if I just had slightly, what if I was still the richest person on the planet but I had slightly less money? Ooh, boo.
No.
let's colonize a new world where I get to be God King.
Yeah, I'd rather be God King of other rich people who can afford to go to a planet that I can never set foot on without wearing some kind of protective suit.
Yeah, also, so maybe I missed something. Help me out here. We are being led to believe that ship Carlton Drake sent up there landed on another planet.
Right. There's no... Yeah.
With life on it.
With life on it, and they got out and got back on.
Mm.
Yeah.
In a normal human lifespan, they did this.
Right, yeah. Where did they go? Oh, no, well, didn't they find a comet?
Yeah, I thought I remember. I don't have that in my notes, but I thought I remember them saying
she
that.
She says, "Well, they were on their way to a planet they thought was hospitable, but then they found a comet, and
cool.
I guess they Armageddoned that comet and landed on it. I don't know. It's very unclear.
I mean, yeah, you can even say, oh my God. Anyway, we're thinking about this movie way too hard.
Yeah, more than they did.
Yes. We get her talking about the symbiotes, and I just love, every time she mentions it, I love how it's like clearly redubbed because of that, the trailer where she says
because
it real.
Because the trailer! Because, yeah. Okay, in the ladies and gentlemen, the trailer for Venom, there were a couple of things that stood out from that trailer. The Turd in the Wind, obviously, is the biggest standout, but the other one was that she kept saying symbiotes.
Yeah.
And she said it like she'd never heard that word before, which is totally fair to believe. And the internet was like, symbiotes? Like, people made fun t-shirts of it and, like, fake cereals and whatnot. But, like, symbiotes.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, no.
Nope.
But you could tell that, like, nobody making the movie gave a crap. And so they just let her say that. And only after fan reaction, which is all this movie is for, was like, no, you don't say it like that. They were like, get back in the booth and say it another way.
Yeah. Do it. Fix it. I've got to imagine it has to be part of some marketing team's plans now. Like, listen, we're going to release a very shitty version of Sonic so that everybody freaks out. And then we're going to show them the new one. And then it kind of doesn't matter how good the movie is because they're like, well, at least they did the thing.
Right.
Yeah.
At least they changed Sonic the Hedgehog. The movie isn't really, really stupid.
Yeah.
But at least Sonic looks good.
God damn it, I am excited for Idris Elba's Knuckles, though.
Oh my God.
I can't help it.
I'm hyped for Jim Carrey's Robotnik because it was one of the best things about that movie.
Yeah, God. And then you see Sonic and Tails on the biplane, and you're like, God damn it, I love
that's
this.
That's kind of cool.
God damn it, I wish
they were in the Emerald Hill Zone and not in, like, San Francisco.
Exactly, but it's just one of those, like, this is how you get people. Anyway. She leads him in. Clearly, there are no cameras in this building. And then she...
What is happening with this building? It's the most high-tech building. It's owned by, like, this billionaire, and there's no cameras. They just walk.
Yeah.
They walk... They need to, like, hide from people like a video game.
Mm-hmm. I wish we saw Tom Hardy hide under under a box. Also, he would make a great snake from Metal Gear Solid. Anyway.
Totally.
I would love to hear what weird voice he chooses to do for that.
Me too.
So she just lets him into the secure holding facility of the symbiotes while she, like, goes to talk to, like, why don't you just go with him? Like, you didn't see anyway.
That seemed like a setup too, because she's like, bye, and then later he's like, I'm dying, what's going on? And she's like, hey, I'm kind of busy right now, but I'll call you back. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what is this? Like, if I were him, I'd be like, oh, this was all intentional.
This was a setup.
This is a setup. No.
Eddie is casually roaming this creepy murder lab, and he's just taking pictures on his phone, and he runs into Maria. That's her name. I got her name on this
Maria,
one.
Thank you.
The lady from outside the bodega. Sirens go off, and she seems to really bother her. This is where we establish that they don't like sound, and we're completely inconsistent with that, by the way. She attacks Eddie, and the symbiote transfers to him, and Maria is super dies. She's dead. She dies now. Then every guard on the planet Earth shows up. Like, it's so that we have a whole army of guards that I guess were in the break room when they were sneaking into the building. Because literally, it's like a video game where you, like, again, going back to Metal Gear Solid, you trip an alarm, everybody's here now, you're fucked.
It just spawns them all. Yeah.
And so they run off, and they run into, in my notes, I call it the Fox Forest. For those that don't know, there's a forest that Fox loves to use in all its X-Men movies that is affectionately dubbed the Fox Forest. And my question is, the lab facility that we see is very clearly on the side of a mountain. Where the fuck are these woods that they're running through right now?
Those woods, and those are the woods, right? Like, my wife, we're watching it, she goes, are those the woods from Logan and the Avengers? Like, are those just Hollywood woods?
Yep. Fox Forest. Like, it's the Fox Forest.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I've seen that. I've seen those woods a lot. Mm-hmm. Also, conspicuous moon or sun. I don't know what, like, but that's later when everything's blue, mm-hmm. where I'm like, what is lighting this scene?
Yeah. What time of day is this supposed to be?
Right. Like, I remember watching The Crow recently, and I'm like, okay, so, like, that's just a spotlight. Like, it's not even, they're even trying, but, like, this whole thing is, like, a dream, so I get it. Also, it's, like, 1994, mm-hmm. but it's 2018 now. Yeah. Come on.
Come on. So the guard's chasing through the forest, and he escapes by scampering up a tree like a squirrel. but, of course,
that
he's, like...
a very real-looking tree. Realest tree I've ever
realest
seen,
realest tree
way.
I've ever seen. And it's a classic, like, we're panning up, CG, set dressing tree.
Actor.
and, of course, like, this is where we get the show of a string. Like, he's just, like... crashing through gates. And I will say, I think one of this movie's saving graces is Tom Hardy's like slapstick commitment to the bit. Like,
yeah,
he's willing to look like a complete cartoon ass.
Right. Like, every actor that's cast as a superhero, when they get their powers, outside of, like, maybe Tobey Maguire, and that might just because he looks like a goober all the time.
Yeah.
But, like, every other actor, when they're, like, discovering their powers, they also have to make sure that they don't, like, lose their posture.
Yeah.
You know, like, their dick doesn't fall out. They're just like, hey, yeah, like, I mean, I'm not really good at it, but I'm still kind of good at it.
Yeah.
At least Tom Hardy's like, no, but, like, if this were real, like, he's thinking about it like an actor.
Yeah.
Not like a movie star being cast in a superhero movie. So he's like, if I broke that door down, I'd be baffled.
Yeah, exactly. I would be so confused right now. And
so
it's just
so consistent throughout. Yeah.
Could you imagine if Sam Raimi, because I was just thinking about the Evil Dead, like slapstick. And I'm like, could you imagine if they let Sam Raimi loose on this shit? Like, I know Venom wasn't his bag, but like, come on.
No. If you get Tom Hardy and Sam Raimi in the same room,
yes,
where like one dude's going to be fully committed and the other dude should be.
Yeah.
Like, that would be a match made in heaven. No, Sam, after Doctor Strange 2, can Sam Raimi make Venom 3?
Please and thank you. And of course, we haven't seen, who knows? I am incredibly curious to see what modern...
I'm sure Circus is out.
Yeah, like what Sam Raimi, modern day Sam Raimi looks like in such a studio controlled movie as a Doctor Strange. We didn't talk about that trailer. Yeah. It's a cool trailer, really cool trailer.
It looks very well cut.
It looks like three movies. It's like which?
Yeah.
Anyway.
And what's so funny is, you know, Sam Raimi had like a miserable time making two movies from Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
You know, he's such control. So I wonder why he did that. You know?
Who's to say? But also, we flash back to a 90s version of Venom that had Nicolas Cage. I want to flash back to an 80s version of Venom with Bruce Campbell as Eddie Brock.
Please.
Because he would definitely have the vibes like, yeah, those. But I know we like to think of Eddie as like big, muscly, and cool, but it's like that Bruce Campbell energy is more Eddie. It's more the personality of Eddie.
So worth it. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, well.
So. Eddie arrives home and he's acting like an absolute goddamn tweaker.
I love it.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's absolutely like losing his mind. He leaves Skirth a bunch of voicemails while he's eating frozen tater tots and garbage chicken. And then he vomits in the toilet. Then he sees, we see like a glimpse of Venom for the first time in the mirror and he freaks out. And I don't, when the eyes bug out, like the Venom eyes bug out, it's like, I always like, I don't know. It's just, I don't, again, I just, like, even when we go back to the symbiote, when it attaches to the first dude, and it just kind of like absorbs through the shirt, I'm like, don't do that. That doesn't look believable.
No. And we're at a point with CG, despite the fact this movie has a lot of really terrible looking CG.
Yeah.
That like, you can... every time Venom or Eddie loses a suit in the comics, he's wearing nothing or undies because the suit replicates clothing.
Yep.
And like, that's kind of one of the more fun aspects of the more visual aspects of the characters, like powers.
Yeah.
And it's one thing we can do now where it's like, make it so that, I mean, like they did it in Let There Be Carnage where it's like Carnage and Cletus are like one thing now.
Yeah.
Whereas Venom is clearly like Eddie's wearing Venom. But like make the suit be the clothing.
Yeah. We're going to,
you know, like,
I'm excited for us to talk about Let There Be Carnage. And like, you're like, you're right. Like Carnage is the one thing, which is weird considering the major thematic point the movie tries to hit at the end.
I know. No, but like, yeah.
But, and you're right. We just had that line, which again, like we're dealing with three script writers here. So who knows what was in what draft, but we have a line where Eddie's like, I was good at tailing people. And it's like, yeah, so you could have had a whole sequence where Eddie's tailing somebody or being tailed, changing his clothes with the symbiote. Like what we need is that, the term, like the fun and games. Like now he's got these abilities. We need that sequence where he's learning how to use them.
Yes.
And we talk about the addiction to power and everything. Like, shit, man. God, there is...
Yeah, fuck. No. Yeah, no, he doesn't enjoy any of the powers that Venom gives him. And then later is like, isn't it fun having that power? And it's like, you don't know either.
Yeah. Like, and also, how long have you had them? Like an afternoon?
Maybe 6 months.
Yeah, I do like, he sees Venom in the mirror and he freaks out so bad that he knocks himself out in the bathtub. Like he falls backwards and he knocks himself the fuck out.
Yeah.
Eddie wakes up And disrupts Anne's perfectly nice lunch with Dan. Again, they're a couple, so they're having lunch in nice places. And yes, they and then they go and nice. Fuck and they go and fuck after. That's the
naturally.
That's, yes. So Eddie is absolutely gonzo losing it. Like, he's fucking sweating. He's grabbing food off people's tables and taking bites out of it. He complains that the steak is dead.
Weird, but also, like, I like it.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's complaining that he's so hot, and he climbs into a lobster tank and starts munching on the lobsters.
Yes, which I heard was his idea. I know that, like, they set it up. Like, I think when they were shooting, Tom Hardy climbed into the lobster tank, and they were like, this is so great, let's redo the scene so that it is all hinged on him getting in the lobster tank.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, it's like the scene opens with a shot.
Yeah.
In the lobster tank,
yeah.
As if they're like, oh man, yeah, here just, comes just the infamous, just you wait until you get, like, we've never seen anything like this before, yeah. A man in a lobster tank, but there's lobsters in there. Like, it's just, they're so proud of themselves for, like, the, like, most minimal achievement in, yes, this movie.
Yes. Dan, by the way, takes all this in stride. He's a fucking champ. Dan,
well, he's like, maybe he, like, well, I moonlight as, like, a rehab doctor. Like, I deal with a lot of tweakers, yeah, in my life. And, like, this guy, textbook example.
Listen,
like, I think he's also sick.
Yeah, it's like, listen, he just got dumped by Anne, and I can say, Anne's great, and I would also be dumped by if I got dumped by Anne. So,
right.
God damn it. So Dan takes Eddie to the hospital and gives him a sedative, and they try to give him an MRI, and the symbiote does not like it.
I like that. That's in keeping with the character and the powers.
Again, we established that it's the sound.
600 megahertz or something?
Yeah. Which is frequency, not loudness. I have questions.
No.
Yeah, I have questions about all that. Mm-hmm. And when they come out, and, yeah, so Eddie flips the fuck out. And when they're walking out of the hospital, Dan's like, yeah, man, you know, I have some claustrophobia too. It's like, Dan, my guy.
Dan,
my
did
guy,
you see
fuck.
Him?
Yeah, you, God, fuck, man. You were either gullible as fuck.
Right? He's just got incredible bedside manner. Like, he's like, dude, no, I'm high as fuck right now. I don't give a shit about anything. It's all just rolling off my back.
Listen, man, I hit the med room every day when I come into work, man. This
yeah,
is all.
Listen, Eddie, I have a serious problem. You are right to protect Anne.
Yeah,
I am gonna bankrupt us. But, like, listen, we'll try the MRI another time.
So
weird.
Eddie has an incident on a trolley because, again, it's San Francisco.
Another scene you could cut.
Yeah, this is a scene you could cut. And also, I'm intercutting it with stuff from that we cut back and forth with Drake, but I'm kind of trying to group them together.
Those Drake scenes, man. Oh, yeah. They're death. Anyway.
And then, and then he's back at his apartment and he gets a call from Ann and Dan and he's told he has a parasite. And again, Dan the man, Dan the champ, because Eddie starts like, yeah, I'm hearing voices, and Dan starts like, well, you know, that's normal. Like, in what, god damn it, Dan, in what fucking
right?
context is that normal?
No, we just, like, it's like there was, like, a mandate, like, Dan is chill AF.
Dan and is never like, uh-oh, SpaghettiOs, this is a problem.
Yeah, hearing voices? I mean, was that before or after this incident you're describing?
Yeah.
Because I feel like that might be kind of like a long-term problem.
Yeah, that's not, I don't know parasites that are talk to you, so that's, let maybe come back in.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, while this is going on, we're at the Life Foundation lab. Maria's dead. We established Maria's dead. Drake is pissed. Even though there is a viable test subject, one person that's working. The way the scene is cut is so weird. He immediately fires his guard. He's like, "You're all fired.
You're fired.
Go get me Eddie Brock." It's like, who are you talking to? The people you just fired?
Right. Also, those people have witnessed you murdering people.
Yes.
And have, like, been on the payroll. Like, you don't just fire them and then just let them leave the building.
Yeah,
like,
you either give them a really good pension or you disappear them.
Right. Or, like, now you're part of the program. I'm going to put you in a symbiote.
Yes.
Like, but no, just you're fired.
Yeah.
It was like that scene from, I'm just thinking about that scene from Tomorrow Never Dies, where things don't go well for the Ted Turner analog character, and he just, like, there's that poor woman who's just trying to keep things together. He goes, "You're fired! Get out of here!" And it's like, you need an MC, man, but all right, that's that. Like, we gotta put a scene where we gotta show he's a jerk.
Yeah.
How do we do that?
He fires people. Not the murdering. We can rationalize.
Well, like, listen, our main tag, our protagonist is a murderer, too, so we gotta figure this out. But he would never fire anybody!
So meanwhile, Riot is in the old lady. After I forgot to mention this, back at the with the Malaysian EMT, which, by the way, that's how she's credited.
Malaysian EMT.
That's how she is credited as the... Anyway, Riot jumps from that person to an old lady. The old lady is at the airport and creepily follows a little white girl into the bathroom.
Yeah, and then kills her because she's the next host.
Yeah. So back at the lab, they're running tests on the remaining host, and the symbiote is eating this person's organs despite they're giving them a ton of liquid nutrition. And this is where the scientists are like, sound hurts her from these hurts to these hurts, whatever the fuck that means. Sure. And Drake, in regards to human, says, such poor design, which is a pretty standard villain line. But also, I don't know what the doctors just told. You just introduced a parasite that's eating their organs. What about that makes you say humans have poor design? I get that that's your perspective. I don't know why it applies here.
No.
Anyway,
stupid.
Skirth is brought before Drake, and he convinces her to admit who she brought right before he leaves.
That scene is such death. No one believes what they're saying in that scene. And she's just like, and he's like, hey, yeah, like, even though I've clearly been murdering people and like and you're frightened of me, like, just tell me what I need to know so I can kill you.
Yeah.
She's like, okay, I feel really bad about it. And you're like, what?
And so then he murders. He leaves her in the room locked in with the symbiote. I don't know. Was it the same one that was in that guy? Who's to say? We don't know. It would have to be.
I would hope so, because there's no other symbiote they use. Yeah,
we do. We could do get a cool shot when Eddie's going through the lab of like a symbiote that's dried up and died. And that was pretty cool. And this is where we're gonna cut off. This is where we're gonna end episode one. This is going to be another two-parter that'll be dropping soon. Unless if you're watching live, because we're going to do that right now. So good for you, the people watching live. If you want to watch this live, if you want to listen to part two, you can do that over patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. If you're already a patron over here, because sometimes we drop the first episode for free on the podcast, thank you for being a patron. Sal, remind them where they can find you.
Yeah, you can find me over at youtube.com/comicpop or youtube.com/comicpopreturns.
Oh, snap.
Two channels, both about comic books and the minutiae thereof. If you like these kind of conversations, you will enjoy yourself over there.
Go over there, and then soon Comic Pop Forever and Comic Pop and Robin.
That's right.
And then we close it all down, and we start all over again with Comic Pop Begins.
Begins. Yeah. That's right. That's the 10-year reunion.